from HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman, hosted by Carl Franklin. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 137, recorded live Tuesday, November 11th, 2008. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. Support is also provided by .NET Developers Journal, the world's leading .NET developer magazine. Online at www.sys-con.com. In this episode, Scott discusses with Richard Campbell the announcements made at the 2008 PDC in Los Angeles.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'm here in Las Vegas, the nation's armpit, at Dev Connections, not all of Las Vegas, just the strip part, and I'm at the Mandalay Bay, and I'm talking with Richard Campbell. How are you, Richard?
Neon armpit, I would say.
The nation's
yes.
Neon armpit.
There you go.
It's on the license plates.
The brightest light in the world is here. It's at the Luxor.
It is really, really bright.
It is really bright. They see it from space.
Actually, when I saw the Luxor light, I wasn't like amazed about it or trying to figure out the engineering. I wanted to know what kind of permits they had to file. That's like, as an engineer, that my first knee-jerk reaction was.
I was thinking about amps and cabling.
Really?
and just how much power is actually being wasted doing that.
Yeah, just blown right back into the sun.
That's right.
Now, if it was done with solar power and they just returned it to from whence it came, that would be impressive.
You're okay with that.
But if it's coal-fired, if the light
well,
that comes out
it's got to be
coming
from the Hoover Dam.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's a waste of electricity.
Honestly,
this place is insane.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the good news is both of us are immune to gambling.
Yeah.
So we are not their customers right off the bat. But
well, I don't think I'm Las Vegas' customer.
No,
I always tell people that, like, hey, you're in Las Vegas. Aren't you having a great time? So, well, I don't drink. I don't gamble. I don't cheat on my wife. I have nothing to do in this town.
You didn't even eat excessively. I mean, you really don't qualify to be here.
Yeah, the 2-for-1 buffet, just not so much.
It doesn't do anything for you.
No, it really doesn't.
Not a thing.
Yeah.
But that's not why. I mean, the one thing, the convention centers here are outstanding. I mean, I'm tired of the Mandalay. I've been here a lot, but it's hard to touch it in terms of workable space. I mean, it is a big convention center, and we have great sessions here.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to be going and giving a presentation a little bit for Dev Connections in about a half an hour. But a couple weeks ago, I was at PDC.
And so was I.
And you were as well. And we didn't get the chance to hook up and do a show, which is a shame. What did you think of the announcements that came out of PDC?
PDC was interesting. I mean, it's not like PDCs of lore, right? The old PDCs. There wasn't one big message, I felt. I mean, Azure.
Really? You don't think this was the cloud PDC? Like that one was the Complus PDC and the .NET PDC?
And the Longhorn PDC? I don't feel like this was the cloud PDC as much as I think Microsoft really worked on doing that. That certainly was the keynote and so forth. And it was nice to see, I felt Ray Ozzie, best keynote I've seen him do yet.
Really? I always expect him to, I want him to dance and say developers.
I'm with you.
I want
he's
show.
Done yet.
Oh, I see.
I think he needs to do better still, but at least I see some progress.
Yeah.
So I think they definitely shaped it that way. But I saw people with stronger reactions to Surface, with strong reactions to Oslo. Like there were some really great things at PDC. Azure was not the only thing.
That's a good point. I mean, Windows 7.
I mean,
and touch, multi-touch.
The multi-touch in general. I mean, Windows 7 is very powerful from that perspective of, I think we're hungry for another OS. I think the focus that we're seeing, like Sinofsky knocked it out of the park.
Really?
I mean, he is such a pleasure to watch.
Yeah.
And I also know him. He's deeply immersed in this whole Windows 7 thing as well. And I think the vision we're seeing around Windows 7 is resonating with the digerati, so to speak.
Well, what do you think? I mean, it's not a revolution.
Nope.
It's refinement.
I think it's the refinements we desperately need.
Have you been playing with Windows 7? Because I've been running it on two different machines.
I have not. I want it on hardware, and I haven't been home. I haven't been home since
PDC.
You haven't
been you're still on the road?
I'm still on the road, and I'm on the road for another 3 weeks.
Oh, that's obscene.
I have not been. Well, it's not true. I haven't been home. It's not that I haven't been home at all. I'm home every weekend for about 24 to 36 hours.
Right. Well, you know what Oprah and Dr. Phil say, that you wouldn't be doing it if it wasn't working for you.
I really enjoy being at conferences, doing the talks and so forth. I really, really do enjoy that. I do try and get home. I had a great summer with my family. This is my job.
Yeah.
I do derive a lot of pleasure from it. But.
So I think that's a very good excuse for not obsessively installing every Windows 7, build like I am.
Yeah. Well, and I definitely want one. But I'm willing to wait. You know, I'll pick the version that makes me happy and I'll run with it for a while. I have enough hardware to afford to have a machine that's cranky, or troubled. And if it's really compelling, I'll use it everywhere. I certainly was an early adopter of Vista for the same reason. I could make it work.
Well, I haven't put my main machine on Windows 7 yet. I'm not quite at that point because I feel that it's not there. But man, it is a joy. It's a refinement. I was expecting to be blown away. You know, I want an operating system to walk up and just slap me in the face and call me Sally. And, you know, this isn't that operating system, right? Like Windows 95 was the first time that happened, right?
Yes. You know,
and then XP was the second time. And Vista was kind of a light slap.
The thing is, XP was a refinement too. XP was a refinement of 2000.
But it was the stability that was, I mean, Windows 95 ran for a day or two.
Yeah. It was crazy. But 2000 was the breakthrough, but it wasn't compelling to a lot of people because it was still very NT-ish.
Yeah, exactly.
But, I mean, for hardware geeks like me, it was revolutionary. I still have 2000 servers I can't give up.
Well, actually, you know, the thing about Vista that's impressed me the most has been 64-bit Vista.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the stability. This laptop hasn't been rebooted in, you know, I don't know how long. It just runs forever. It's a joy. But back to Windows 7, my initial reaction when I installed it was like, right? Looks like Vista.
Yeah, big deal.
And then I started poking around. There's all these little things that are going to make my dad's life easier.
Right.
Like if you hit the start menu and you type in RAM, just RAM or how much RAM,
right,
you get an answer.
Wow.
How much RAM does this computer have? And you hit enter and it brings up system properties. Now, system properties already exists.
Right.
But it happens to have the answer.
But instead of your dad calling you and saying, how do I find out how much RAM I've got?
Right click on my computer.
Yeah.
So if you type in, transparent or glass or aero or anything like that, any word you can think of to describe, why are these freaking windows see-through? You get an answer. Adjust the transparency of windows. And you click on it and it takes you to the style. And there's like 200 or 300 of these little tasks that are indexed and available in the start menu
and very much that natural language thing has been integrated in.
Exactly.
It just works.
Yeah, there's dozens and dozens of keywords. So you've got 250 plus tasks times some number of keywords. You know, so there's many, many, many entry points into this.
Isn't this always the Microsoft way? I mean, I know you wax poetic about 95, but 95 had its issues. 98 was the good version, the one that did everything it was supposed
to.
2000 was a breakthrough version.
Yeah.
XP was the compelling one.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So Vista, which is a big jump. I mean, look at how much stuff they changed in Vista.
There's the jump and then the refinement.
Refinement. The ones that make you happy are the refinements of the jump.
The jeté and the plié.
This is what I'm saying.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah, I think that's a very good point. It's all the things that were irritating about Vista.
Right.
Just aren't there anymore.
Yeah, but because they did the hard work in Vista, which was the new driver model, the new graphics model, all of these sort of core things that ended up being a little rough in the end. The UAC is necessary. It is a good technology. We need it. It is rough in Vista, it's refined in Windows 2000.
In Windows 7, or at least the beta build that they gave us at PDC, there's just a slider bar.
Right.
How often and how irritating do you want me to be? You know, it's a paranoid.
It's a paranoid knob.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly.
So, and that's good. We need that, right? We need that adjustability. But first, we needed infrastructure in place to stop apps from destroying your machine.
You know, one other nice thing about the 7 was that I immediately went off to download stuff. Like, I was like, okay, I need to burn an ISO image. I'm running Windows 7. I'll go download my favorite ISO burner. And I noticed that the ISO had its own new special icon.
Oh.
So I double click on it. ISO burn pops up. They have an ISO burner built in.
Thank goodness.
Double click on it and hit burn. So that's just like one example
One more utility I don't need to concern myself. I mean, I want the stack of stuff I install before I do anything on this machine to be zero.
Yeah.
Right? I just want the stuff to work.
Exactly. WordPad looks creepily like Word 2000.
Yes, it's ribbonized
2007.
It.
It has open XML support, so you can save as an OOF XML file or whatever. But basically, it's Office XML, and you can open that in other applications like OpenOffice or whatever. I mean, it's a real little word processor now. It's like Works.
Yeah, it is.
It's like the shipping Works.
We're going to miss Notepad. Is that what you're saying?
I like Notepad.
Oh, you're a Notepad 2 guy, I think.
Well, I'm going back and forth. I'm using an editor called the E text editor.
The E.
E.
Okay.
Like it takes some serious stones to come out with a piece of shareware that's called E.
E.
Just try. You're like, when you go and Google for it, you're actually competing with the letter E.
E.
E for electron, E for energy. You know what I mean? So to show up in the first page at all is a feat.
Yeah.
But no, it's called E text editor, and it's basically TextMate, the Mac TextMate
right.
for Windows.
Okay.
So I'm using that one more and more. Let me see. What else came out at PDC? The multi-touch stuff. Did you get a chance to caress the HP touchscreen?
Oh, yeah. And I love the fact that they're opening up to an SDK now to third-party developers. But it's Windows 7 is going to do this as well. I mean, we're just coming to recognize that this is the new UI element we want, is some kind of multi-touch solution.
Yeah, and when they're baking it in, I got a chance to talk to some of the touch guys mm-hmm. at the booth there. And I was like, well, how is this going to – because as a developer, it's like, okay, that's great. I can touch it. How does this look?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they're baking it in all the way down at the Win32 level.
Right.
So just as there's, WM mouse move, they've got WM touch.
Right.
So these are window messages for those folks that are not C++. So you can write, your hardcore unmanaged C++ app that knows lots and lots of information, and then it'll also be exposed in WPF in some really, really high level way. Like, for example, when I ported Baby Smash to the Surface, I just went from key down and mouse down to contact down. Those will become touch messages or something like that.
And come all the way back up. And I love the fact that when you got it onto the Surface, I think it was at Tim's party.
Yeah, it was Tim Huckabee's party. Actually, for folks that don't know, I did a talk at PDC on this product called Baby Smash that I have, babysmash.com. And I went to a party, Tim Huckabee from Internology, who just happened to have a Surface in his backyard.
Those things happened to Tim.
Yeah, this is the kind of person that Tim is. Like, oh, hey, yeah, there's the PlayStation. Oh, there's the Surface. Yeah. Oh, and here's an original pinball machine from 1940. Oh, the Surface? You want to see the Surface? Yes.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, I happened to have the Surface simulator version of my Baby Smash application on a thumb drive. So I stuck it on the thing.
Loaded it up.
And we had a baby. We actually had an extra baby there.
It was Clemens Faster's
baby.
Little baby.
Ava
got
was there.
Got right on top of the Surface and started smashing it. It was beautiful.
It was pretty cool, yeah.
It was hilarious.
People have a visceral reaction to touch. I have always wanted to have that Minority Report, I want to pick up a window and I want to throw it over to the other monitor.
I agree. I just think that vertical makes no sense. It's tiring, actually, to wave your arms around like that. Try it for 15 minutes.
I'm gesticulating wildly now.
Yes.
But
actually keep your arms moving and the precision movements at that angle. The horizontal position is the right position.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman with a word from our sponsor. Do you know how to build Web 2.0 Ajax applications with Web 1.0 components? You really can't. If you want to do the next generation web applications, you'll need next generation components. Just like the ones that our friends at Telerik have got, they're RAD controls for ASP.NET Ajax. It's a huge pack of web controls built on top of ASP.NET Ajax that'll add previously impossible performance and interactivity to your next project. The new controls mirror the Ajax API from ASP.NET, so development is really straightforward. The client scripts are shared, so loading time is not a problem. You just set a couple of properties and you'll be able to automatically bind to web services for a really efficient operation. The new RAD editor from ASP.NET Ajax Telerik loads up to 4 times faster than before, and the new RAD grid handles thousands of records in just milliseconds. But as always, it's best to try for yourself. So you can visit telerik.com/ASP.NET Ajax and download a trial. Thanks a lot. You know what I would like? I would like a Surface that looked like a dinner tray. That you would like bring breakfast in bed on.
Absolutely.
And I would want to set that in front of me, in front of my monitor. So I'd see my keyboard, and then in front of my, behind my keyboard, moving away from my body, would be a horizontal tray. And then going up would be my monitor.
Well, it's when you start thinking of the coffee table being sort of a 3-foot interface
right.
to the 10-foot vertical interface of the television screen,
mm-hmm.
There's interesting possibilities there.
Well, and there's a lot of white space. There's a lot of space there, but not just from between the couch and the TV, but I'm thinking from my office desk to my office monitor.
Right.
If it's my desktop, what if I could literally pick something up off of my vertical monitor and bring it down?
Onto that Surface piece. Get away from the whole projection, the thing that needs to be a table and da-da-da-da-da. Now it's nice and flat. An 8.5 by 11 page sitting in front of your keyboard.
Yeah, exactly. An 8.5 by 11 page or an A4 page
right.
And that I could pick up So I could take stuff, drag it off of my window, and kind of stroke it downwards
onto that thing,
and then take that thing with me.
Right. Or drop your cell phone onto it and load it into the phone. I mean, this whole dynamic of the surface model of communication.
Actually, you know, speaking of, the idea of taking your phone and putting it onto something, I guess Sony just announced, I forgot the name of it, a new, not Bluetooth, but a new wireless protocol.
Oh, yeah.
Where you could, basically it's very, very, very low power and incredibly short range.
It's a, literally almost has to be touching, but you don't actually have to plug it in.
Exactly. They're saying that Bluetooth is too hard, pairing is too hard, the range is too much,
yeah,
the power requirements are too much. But what if I could just take my cell phone and just put it on a plate on my desk and leave them all sitting there? Then things could transfer, but they need to be within inches. So then
I'm fine with that, as long as we get the charging in that too.
Yeah. So let's assume that you have charging, but the Sony thing is primarily an issue of data transfer. So then we put those there. Then I think about that in the context of the live mesh. So Sony is the hardware in this case. Live mesh is the idea of being synchronized everywhere. It would be interesting to just drop something into a folder on my desktop, and because my cell phone was sitting on this pad,
it shows up there.
It just showed up there without any of the hassle of pairing and Bluetooth
and syncing and all those sorts.
Because the whole concern about Bluetooth is security, and someone could be
Just because it does too many things.
But there's the physicality of it.
Yeah.
From a security perspective, of course you can put files there. It's within an inch.
Yes.
Of the thing.
So that this proximity control. I mean, folks have played with Bluetooth where they're literally gunning a mile.
Yeah,
right? You see the Bluetooth rifle. So you have to wonder, any wireless technology could be manipulated to extend its range. How do we keep that under control? So, I mean, it's nice that they've got it down to an inch, but can a black hat come up with an antenna that extends that?
Yeah, I mean, as a security guy, of course, you have to take my utopia and spoil it.
Well, I'm a paranoid guy, man. Yeah. Just because you're not paranoid doesn't mean they aren't out to get you.
That's true. I still like the idea of completely punting on the security proximity concept by saying has to be touching.
And this thing is, if it could put it down on a surface and the physical contact of that surface would be the conduit, but I don't want to discard the point of the real reason I plug my phone in to transfer data is to charge the phone. So any solution that transfers data must transfer power.
We need to get into the whole wireless power transfer
thing. And that stuff exists. We just got to commit to a standard and start building phones with it.
But don't they waste ridiculous amounts of power?
The power, now you got a whole other can of worms, right? We are in Vegas, power wasting land of all. Yeah, it's power inefficient.
Even the contact ones. I've seen the little plates and they always say, and one day you'll have a desk that has all, but they leak just obscene amounts of power.
Yeah,
these osmosis based systems. Like, remember the smartwatch, the Microsoft Spot watch?
The Spot.
It had kind of an osmosis style thing where you'd set it on, you just set it on its holder and power would transfer.
And that would be enough.
But I thought it must have leaked huge amounts of power. I don't know. I don't know enough about power.
Well, and it's just, they're not particularly efficient, but therein lies the essential problem with all these things. So, I mean, I'm far happier carrying a phone that has a mini USB plug in it so that I don't have a custom cable, that I can always plug it in. That's my sync. That's my charge. Then I'm happy.
So many cables.
Well, that's why I want a standard cable. I mean, the mini USB makes me happy because I can buy that cable anywhere.
Okay, I'll give you that. So then we need to start using a lot of the power that we're already generating. Like, the idea that I have a watch that needs to be charged is obscene. I'm walking outside, I'm in the sun, and I'm swinging my arms all day long.
We ought to be collecting power. But this is why I can't stand Bluetooth headsets. Besides the fact that I just end up leaving my phone in my pocket and getting brain cancer and testicular cancer at the same time, that's a separate issue. Charging the bloody headset makes me mental.
There's actually a new phone coming out that has a headset built in that docks in the back of the phone.
One less thing to charge. Yeah.
Exactly. And I think we'll see that, where you can slide the Bluetooth out of the phone, or it's hidden in the phone somewhere.
Well, and also then you have it with you too. You don't leave it places and forget about it and don't have the charging cable and all of that insanity.
Now, am I the only guy who covers my mouth when I'm talking on the phone in public?
No, there's a few people who do. You know who does that? Carl Franklin does that. I
just
do that.
Can't. I was talking to Jesse Liberty today, and I'm walking on the elevator, and you know what I said? I'm getting on an elevator. I'll call you right back.
Right.
So I get in the elevator, and there's three guys in the elevator
talking on the phone.
Oh, I'm just here in the elevator with a bunch of people. You know,
everybody say hi.
I don't think they can hear me. But what is that?
So I'm now at the point where I don't have it with me right now, but I have a little jammer with a push button on it. It'll hang up every phone with
you have a jammer,
15 feet radius around me.
That's like those little remote controls that only do one thing. They
turn
off
TVs. I've got the equivalent for cell phones.
That's brilliant.
Totally illegal.
I must have that.
Yeah, I'll arrange you if you really want one.
That's fantastic.
But yeah, the phone's all disconnected. And the funny part is, so what really, my real experience with that is I push that button and everybody says, hello, can you hear me? All at the same time.
Awesome. I need to take that into movie theaters. Cool. So what about cloud computing? You didn't think it was the cloud PDC.
Well, I think they wanted it to be the cloud PDC, but I think the question is how important is cloud computing really? You know, we talked about the core of this technology, this whole, putting your data remote in a data center that's owned by a third party during the dot-com boom. And the general reaction was, my data's where?
See, that's the thing that's so interesting. When I was working on, like, I worked on 800.com,
right.
gear.com, there was that big discussion early on. Do we, as a company that sells stuff,
right,
have our own data center? And they not only built their own data center, but they kept them, like, in the warehouse, and they did it, like, donut style. So in this giant abandoned warehouse, in the middle, they built this kind of like MCP Tron thing that was like encircled in you know, diamond encrusted glass, so that anyone around the warehouse could look into the center.
But the metaphor there is that this data center is the heart of your company.
That was the metaphor in the late 90s, early 2000s, but because the trust wasn't there. No one could trust an ISP to be up as, you know, 9.59s or always.
Well, and the internet's not up for 5.9s. How can any remote data center be up for 5.9s?
So was it just a matter of time? Did we just need to build up trust?
Well, I don't know that we have. I just know that our technology's advanced. You know, who's actually using this stuff, really?
I run I host my blog at OrcsWeb, right?
Sure.
But I know people who host their blog at home on the other side of their cable modem connection or the other side of their, you know, at some point, somebody's going to be down. But for some reason, they just don't want to give that up. Well, Jeff Atwood doesn't host on a physical piece of hardware like I do. He actually just has a VM. So when he moved hosters, he just shut the VHD down and handed it to another guy.
And so on one hand, the cloud, the whole Azure platform, there is the VM model, and that's being used in a lot of places where it's just another way to host in different places. But the coding model is much more challenging. From an IT perspective, we're still getting back to this whole issue of, I see two core audiences here. One is the large enterprise that is just not prepared to commit the massive infrastructure it's going to take. They'd rather buy by utilization and get the geo distribution and so forth. But now they're dealing with the regulatory requirements of somebody else is in control of this stuff. They're dealing with that sort of core competency. You know, is this appropriate for our business? Are our shareholders going to be okay with that? And so forth. The other audience to me is the little guy, the little guy who has nothing and is just winging it and trying to create the next Flickr or Twitter or one thing like
then
that.
The question is, when the little guy becomes big, will the cloud platform grow with them? So, for example, Jeff runs his blog on a single VHD. But let's say his blog became the most popular blog in the universe.
Right.
He can't scale beyond that one VHD because...
Scaling it is not going to be a simple thing to do.
Yeah, but let's just think about it simplistically for a second because it is a reasonable... It's a good example. He runs this little virtual machine. He can put it on bigger hardware, but ultimately that VM has minimum, you know, a certain amount of memory.
It's an atomic unit.
It's
only
going to
go so far.
It's a VM. He can't scale out. He can only scale up.
Right.
Scale up, add memory, add processors.
And then he has to redesign if he's going to go bigger.
And exactly. Now, with this Azure platform and platforms like it, like the Elastic Cloud Computing platform, you're building to an API. So you're building kind of, I guess, more, I don't know if this metaphor works anymore. You're building these smaller units. Maybe they're electrons. Maybe they're quarks. I don't know. But they're smaller. And they don't know that they're in a machine. They know that they're in an environment. And theoretically, they can scale out as far as you want it. So the question will be, what is the first tiny startup that goes with a platform like this and then hits it big?
Yeah. And I don't think it's happened yet.
And stays. Well, one example, at least on the S3 side, which is more storage-based, not computing side, would be the SmugMug.
Right.
Right. They, I think, are probably the most popular, Web 2.0 startup that I can think of that really, really, really depends on Amazon for their...
And with the problems involved. I think the other challenge around this, which is one thing that didn't come out of PDC, was the pricing model of this whole thing.
Yeah.
Can the little guy actually afford to use this infrastructure and pay as he goes?
It'll need to be competitive.
Yeah, it's going to be very challenging because I think those two different audiences, that large scale system and the little guy, have very different pricing tolerances. Like it's going to be interesting to see if that actually works. But you know, one of the things that came out of that whole discussion over and over again, I heard this was, can I run the Azure servers myself? I don't want you. I want my own cloud.
Right.
You can have your cloud. I want my cloud.
I want my own personal cloud.
Yeah. Yeah. And I can see us doing that maybe for development purposes initially, but I actually think that enterprises are going to want to run in that infrastructure themselves.
It's clearly possible because there is a developer cloud, which is the cloud you use when you develop on your own machine. But whether or not that's where their will wants to take them, I don't know. We'll have to find them and ask them.
Yeah. And whether they're actually going to do that, but, it's interesting to think that way. I think that we still have this core issue of, am I willing to do this remote? And almost this could be a bridge that I start off running with my own infrastructure. And then as, you know, peak loads come and my infrastructure is hitting its limits, that I can start offloading this to the external cloud.
What if Microsoft moves some of their stuff, something important of theirs, into the cloud? Well, to make a point.
But I also think that there's energy around this. You know, you look at the initial story of Azure as it's told, which was really they collected up all of their online products, the MSNs and Live and so forth, and said, well, a lot of this stuff has stuff in common. We should be running a common infrastructure. I do think that Microsoft should be moving those products into this infrastructure as proof, but also because it's probably a really good way to run it.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, you know, as far as duplication of effort.
Yeah, why would we? I think that's how they got there in the first place, was this recognition of we're duplicating effort all over the place. Let's come up with a common platform for it that helps us.
That's a good question.
I also think it's how Amazon got here too. Yeah. You know, nobody really sat down and said, hey, let's create cloud computing. It's really, we're doing this ourselves. Why don't we sell some?
Yeah, let's sell the remainder.
You know, to me, it always made sense to me that Amazon was selling unused computing horsepower that they had.
Yeah. Well, because what they're saying is that we've become so good at doing our work.
Yeah,
we've got this leftover.
We have leftovers. You can have it for a fee. And I think that's true of Microsoft too. I mean, they talk about Microsoft being one of the largest purchasers of computing power in the world. They really are good at it. They're going to move, I'm presuming they're moving their stuff to this infrastructure as well. And that's going to help give everybody confidence that they can do that. Yeah. But I still have this sense that people want to run their own cloud computing servers. You know, I think that will be an interim step and it'll help facilitate that larger step if it's really going to happen. Believe me, I'm not convinced. I'm a cynic on all of this stuff.
You should be. It's healthy.
Absolutely. You know, I have still that IT mindset. Change is good. You go first.
Change is good. You go first. Yeah. Well, I'm going to hunt down some of these cloud computing guys and see if I can get some answers to the very good questions that you brought up. Thank you very much, Richard Campbell, for sitting down with me today.
Always a pleasure, man.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.